Off the ball. Rugby.
I think Prendergast is going to be the 10 in the World Cup in 27. I think his ceiling is higher. I think he's got more natural ability than Crowley.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
NFL on Off the Ball.
Steelers with the touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
Off the ball.
Where's your Messiah now, Kansas? The Philadelphia Eagles put the mother of all beatdowns on Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, and everybody else who was trying to make a little bit of history. Keane and Mick, very good afternoon, good evening, good morning, if you're still on a rollover from last night.
Bits of sleep here and there, Jerry,
Or maybe everybody fell asleep at halftime because the game was over, Mick.
Fell asleep at halftime, woke up for the third quarter, but was decided to go to sleep for the fourth quarter. How about that? It was a conscious decision that there was no point in denying myself any more sleep.
Keane, if people are just coming to this, I'm sure everybody by this stage who listens to this podcast knows exactly what happened. But at any point, did it feel like there was the potential for a comeback?
But because of who was at quarterback on that side of the field, I was still at halftime thinking to myself, you know, maybe I think I'll go to bed now, but I wouldn't be surprised if I wake up tomorrow and it was 43-40 to the Chiefs in the end. At 14-0, I was kind of saying, okay, there's a good 15% chance the Eagles are going to win here now. And then eventually it was kind of like, right, nothing is working for the Chiefs. That second interception came along and it was like, wow, okay, this is not the Patrick Mahomes we've watched for the last 2 years or 3 years even. I don't remember him ever looking like this. The only time you could probably say it was the other Super Bowl against the Buccaneers where he was injured and getting the crap beaten out of him. And no, he was getting the crap beaten out of him last night too. But even considering the pressure the Eagles got, Mahomes was just nowhere near the level you expect him to be. And I was on this little known show, Jerry, you might be familiar with it, the Off the Ball Breakfast Show on Friday morning. And they asked me to preview this game and break it down. And I kind of said, the Eagles are the better team at every single position except for quarterback. Now, me saying that, you'd think this isn't a surprising result to me or this isn't a surprise the way the game went. But I'm still absolutely shocked. This is the last way I expected this game to play out. I was 100% sure that if anything was going to happen, it would be the Eagles would scrape a win out or the Chiefs would run away with it because of Jalen Hurts. And you've got to give the Eagles all of the credit here because they dominated. They dominated every single facet to the point that all of us were bored by the second quarter, I feel like.
It sounds like you're giving everybody in the Eagles except Jalen Hurts some credit there, Keane.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. He was really, really good. Like, he did. We've talked about him all season long about how he's not capable of doing things that other quarterbacks are doing. But when he is put in a position to just be consistent to his own skill set, he can do that better than a lot of quarterbacks when he is playing well. And that's what you saw last night. I think like the qualifier you have to put on it is that the pass protection was just phenomenal. Like the Chiefs' defensive line was not a factor at all. Did anyone talk about Chris Jones besides him having tears on the sideline? Did anyone mention George Karlaftis at all throughout the game? Normally, those guys are in the face of are in the face of the quarterback all game long. The only time Hurts had any real mistake was the blitz from Spagnuolo that led to the interception where they completely fooled the center, got him looking left when he needed to look right, and the linebacker came right up the middle to get the pressure on Hurts, and that led to the turnover. But outside of that, like, he ran for what, over 50 yards by the end of the second quarter. He had thrown for 150 by the end of the second quarter. He had essentially put the game to bed with a lot of help from AJ Brown being incredibly good and kind of dominating Trent McDuffie, even with that offensive pass interference play early in the game. So no, massive, massive credit to Jalen Hurts. I think actually more so credit to him mentally and the fact that he came into this game and kind of came through a turbulent season, came back from a lot of question marks about him and kind of rose the occasion on the biggest stage, which we've seen him do twice now. So you got to give him credit for that. We've seen him do it at Alabama. We've seen him do it in the first Super Bowl that they lost, and we've seen him do it here. And now he's finally got the just rewards. And he spoke about it a bit after the game saying, oh, I kind of lean into the hate and all that kind of stuff. Normally a player says that, you're kind of like, ooh, that's not a good sign. But with him, it seems to work.
They said on Sky afterwards that before the game, that his screensaver on his phone, where we all have pictures of our kids or whatever, is a picture of him walking off the field with Chiefs confetti coming down around him at the Super Bowl 2 years ago. So certainly mentally in the game anyway. But I think one of the things we talked about all year, Ger, when it comes to Hurts, and we've had loads of conversations about him, I did think we made the point a lot that Jalen Hurts is good enough as a quarterback for this team, a team this good, to win. but there was times when he wasn't playing well enough at all. And as the course of the season went on, and we talked about it a good bit, Hurts became the quarterback he was 2 years ago, which is somebody that can do enough to bring an incredibly talented team, an incredibly talented offense, backed up by an amazing defense, enough to win a Super Bowl. And he had one of the games of his life last night. It was actually great to see. Like,
yeah, I think as well that possibly he hasn't peaked. Like, there's definitely an element that his touch last night was excellent. It wasn't just he was running. It was so they obviously know exactly what they've got with him, but I still think that there's some room for improvement. And he's a genuine superstar now, as you say. He's performed incredibly well in the two Super Bowls that he's been in. The defense for the Eagles obviously needs to be taken into account when we talk about how bad Mahomes played. Maybe Mahomes had a bad game and the Eagles defense played unbelievably well, or maybe the Eagles defense is just going to be one of those all-time great performances in a Super Bowl that we talk about for decades to come. Just how good were they, Cian?
Yeah, but just before you mentioned Hurts there, he's still 26, by the way. I just quickly looked up his age as you were saying that. That's still very young. How good were they? You've never seen Mahomes look like that before. And like that, the constant pressure was the thing. I know Hurts got the MVP, and now this is where you can call me the hater and not giving him the credit and all that kind of stuff. I thought Josh Sweat should have been. Josh Sweat had like 2.5 sacks by the end of the second quarter. I keep saying by the end of the second quarter because the game was over at that stage. And he had 2.5 sacks, but he also, at the start of the third quarter, when the Chiefs got the ball after halftime and they actually got a good play to start off, and you thought, okay, maybe the comeback's going to start coming. It was Sweat coming off the edge, him going against Joe Thuney at left guard, trying to play left tackle, who's not capable of doing it. He took advantage of that matchup over and over and over again, and he got the sack that essentially ended that third quarter drive. So it immediately kind of shut down any hint of a comeback, any hint of momentum going to the Chiefs' way. The defensive line there is the key. So it's the sixth time in Super Bowl history that a quarterback hasn't been blitzed. Mahomes wasn't blitzed at all throughout the game. I think it was 32 or 33 dropbacks or whatever it was. And they didn't need to blitz him because they could just use their front four to rush all game. The previous five quarterbacks who have suffered that fate had the same outcome, the same results. They all lost the Super Bowl as well, which kind of makes sense because if the other team's winning, you tend to have to try and blitz. So it's not that meaningful a statistic. But because they weren't blitzing, you could see the coverage sit back. It's why you had the linebacker jump in the pass over the middle with Sweat coming off the edge, pushing the left tackle into Mahomes. When you see that play initially on the broadcast angle, the second interception, you think, oh, Mahomes, he's throwing an awful pass. You've never seen Mahomes do that. And then you see the replay and Sweat has pushed his offensive lineman right back in, so he's taken away Mahomes' feet as the ball is coming out. The linebacker obviously there makes an incredible diving interception too. So you've just got guys who complement each other at every level. Mahomes said it after the game, defensive line was phenomenal, linebackers were phenomenal, secondary were phenomenal. There was often nowhere for him to go with the ball. There was an occasion early in the first quarter where after Mahomes had been under pressure a lot, and Andy Reid went to a seven-man protection. So you've got seven guys there to account for four pass rushers, and Mahomes was still under pressure immediately and had nowhere to go with the ball. So, like, outside of the gigantic DeAndre Hopkins drop, the gigantic play that DeAndre Hopkins was accused of dropping, even though I would say Mahomes missed that throw when Hopkins was running across the field and the ball was just out of his reach. Outside of that, there wasn't really a feeling of a big play in the offense prior to garbage time coming in the second half. If Mahomes had hit that pass, okay, maybe everything changes. Maybe they build that bit of momentum. Travis Kelce had a couple of drops early, so maybe you can point to them as well. But for the most part, it was the defense suffocating the offense rather than the offense making bad mistakes or the offense missing opportunities.
Vic Fangio.
They're so young.
Go on.
Sorry, go on. No, just that Eagles defense is so young as well. You look at somebody like DeJean, who's a rookie who was like outstanding and obviously had a big game, but as a big playoffs overall, Jalen Carter, obviously Smith, you know, we're talking about Josh Sweat being a free agent this year. Like, they found Zach Bond off a scrap heap. And he's an all-pro player this year, like, you know, like starting 11, best defensive linebacker, one of the best three defensive linebackers in the whole league. You know, it's actually unbelievable the way they put it together, but they have no weak spots either. They're phenomenal. And it's funny, you mentioned earlier, Ger, did we have any doubts at any point, or did we have any sense that the Chiefs were going to come back at any point? And I actually wrote down what was going to happen in the game, and one of the main things was like, don't let yourself get sucked into the fact that Mahomes won't be able to come back here. The Eagles could start off, I think I had them down 10-0. You know what I mean? They'd get the first touchdown, but that once the Chiefs were alive, they were alive. And watching it in real, I could not feel that way, because the first drive, when the dodgy kind of pass interference call on AJ Brown, but just how easy the Eagles were managing it. But then it's also when the Chiefs, when you saw Mahomes scrambling back or running around like 50 yards backwards to try and get off a pass, very lucky not to be intercepted. You're like, they don't have the protection, and they didn't have any running game to back him up either, and they didn't even try. I think they only had 6 rushes from running backs over the court. Neither of them got into double figures. So, like, that's insane. So it just didn't feel, as much as you're kind of telling yourself, this is the Chiefs, this is Mahomes, when you're actually watching the game, it just felt like a complete mismatch on all sides. And for all the criticism we can probably rightly give Mahomes, I'm not 100% sure what he was meant to do over the course of the game.
Yeah. The reason I was talking about Vic Fangio is that this is his first Super Bowl, but he's a similar vintage to Spagnuolo. And maybe there's something in being, like, really old as a defensive coordinator and having seen almost everything that anyone can offer, because it was such a beatdown. It was such a complete performance. And obviously they do have the talent to be able to go out and do whatever it is that he decides they're going to do, not blitzing in this instance. But there is something in the wisdom of these guys who have seen millions and millions and millions and millions of plays.
The thing about Fangio as well, like you mentioned there, the maturity aspect of him, the guy who's seen millions and millions and millions of plays. When you find these defensive coordinators and they've got all these hype early in their career, they're going to blitz. They're going to do mad things. They're going to try and show off as much as they can, and they're going to get into these key situations and not necessarily panic, but be aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. And Fangio probably would have fallen into that earlier in his career. But now, I mentioned that not blitzing aspect, and that's kind of the peaceful, the acceptance of, right, this is where I'm at, this is what's great, this is what I'm really good at. And oftentimes in these big decision-making positions, it's making a decision that doesn't stand out as a decision. Doing nothing is often doing something, kind of an idea. And he could have very easily kind of gone away from what was working last night, because you see defensive coordinators do it so often, especially against the elite quarterbacks, because you think, I have to keep this quarterback guessing. I can't just show him the same stuff over and over again, even though it's working, because he'll figure it out. And part of that now is Mahomes didn't really have the weapons. Like, a guy like Kelce can't really run anymore. Juju Smith-Schuster can't really run anymore. Marquise Brown has never really been that guy. Without Rashee Rice there, they were kind of hamstrung a little bit. Obviously, Xavier already made some plays and had some big plays in the second half. But overall, if you're just sitting in something that's working, it generally isn't something defensive coordinators want to do. It's not a comfortable place for them. You had Fangio, you had Spagnuolo. Both of those guys are like, yeah, we know who we are. We've been in this league long enough. We're not trying to prove ourselves. We're just trying to win. And we made every decision right to try and win. And Spagnuolo, obviously, last night didn't go his way, but he's done it previously before. So yeah, Both of these guys are right on top of each other, right next to each other, as two of the great defensive coordinators.
But one thing that Spagnuolo had a choice to make last night, and they chose to shut down Saquon Barkley. And even though they lost and were hammered, it was probably the right decision. You put the game in the hands of Jalen Hurts and make him beat you, and he did, and he was outstanding, and there was nothing really they could do. Fangio had no choice to make. That lack of a running game on the Chiefs, and like, obviously Mahomes didn't have enough protection that they didn't even need to blitz, because they were getting there at all times because of the protection. It is a team that has been, all year we've been saying it, it's like, how are they getting over these games? How are they the number one seed? And you trust them because they are the Kansas City Chiefs, and because they have won 3 Super Bowls. And it got to the point last night where you're like, this is mad. They shouldn't even be here. This is a bad football team with a great quarterback at this stage, you know, and a decent defense. But again, they had to, it was up against an elite offense. They shut down Saquon Barkley all night, but they weren't able to shut down the passing game.
That was the first
thing. I know the Chiefs previously lost to the Buccaneers, but this game felt more like that Broncos Seahawks game, where it was like a demolition. It was like, why are the Broncos in this game? It was like, where are the Chiefs in this game? And you guys might have a better idea off the top of your head, and I'm kind of throwing this at you now without any preparation. I can't remember a team dominating the NFC Championship game, or even the AFC Championship game on their side, and the Super Bowl to this level that the Eagles have done. Mick, you have that answer?
I have it. I was going to bring it up earlier. So there's a great stat here that the biggest points differential in the Super Bowl era of the NFC or AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, the Eagles are third all time last night, so 50 points. Listen to these two pretty good teams that have beat them. The 1985 Bears, you might have heard of them, they were plus 60. And the 49ers, 1989, the second last Montana, is it? That's 72. if you think about Patrick Mahomes scoring two garbage time touchdowns, you know, they're pretty much up there with those two teams. So it's as dominant a run of championship game Super Bowl as there ever has been, really.
That Bears defense probably scored 35 of those points as well, didn't it?
I'd imagine so.
So just a brief recap here. They reached the Super Bowl with Hurts and that team and go very close to beating maybe the peak Kansas City Chiefs, and then start the following season with no sign of a hangover, but collapse. And this time last year, there are genuine questions about whether or not the head coach is going to get sacked, whether or not the head coach and the quarterback can ever have a relationship, whether or not the quarterback had, you know, it was a complete flash in the pan. And here they are, Super Bowl champions, putting together, you know, a best Super Bowl run since the late 80s.
And Keane, that fed into this year. Like, I mean, Sirianni come like October was on the hot seat, and we thought that like the losing six games in a row last season, moving into this season, starting off kind of sheepishly, maybe, it seemed like Sirianni could be gone. And now we're looking at a guy who's been to the Super Bowl 2 times in 3 years as a young head coach and has put together this team and seems like one of the elite coaches in the NFL.
It was like week three, week four or something, where Sirianni, I think it was a Buccaneers game, where he was turning around and like giving shit to his own fans. And it was like, oh, this is falling apart. This is a mess. And you mentioned this time last year, as far as I remember, and this is my priorities of remembering things about the NFL, even like I'm not trying to remember the exact coaching moves and discussions that happened at this time of year. But as far as I remember, there was like one of those dreaded, oh, let's talk it out and see if we'll keep you here kind of situations. Because Howie Roseman has built and rebuilt this roster over and over and over again, and they always have the best talent, they always have the best trades, they always make the smartest draft picks. So no, whenever anything goes wrong in Philadelphia, nobody is turning around and going, oh, we need to fix the GM, we need to change the GM. Howie Roseman knows what he's doing. It was similar to Ozzie Newsome in Baltimore. It was similar to Kevin Colbert in Pittsburgh, where you get those deals and you stay in them for 10 plus years because the quality of your work is proven. Now we're in a situation where Sirianni, like, it can be interesting in the NFL. A Super Bowl ring can absolutely make you and set you up for life if you're the quarterback. Doesn't always matter as much when you're the head coach. A guy like Doug Peterson, he got his Super Bowl ring and was gone fairly quickly. There's there's other examples of it where the coach wins, and even within the next year or two, they suddenly start going, is he the right man for this job again? Now, the Eagles have so much talent, and they're going to retain so much of that defense and offense, and because they're so young, the expectation will be next year to win a Super Bowl. If they don't win a Super Bowl next year, it'll immediately be back to Sirianni's question marks, unless Hurts completely falls apart, and then they'll blame him. But right now, that doesn't really matter a whole lot. They absolutely dominated the best quarterback in the history of football, as far as I'm concerned. Which I'm guessing is a debate Mick might want to reopen right now about whether he is the best quarterback in the history of football.
We'll get to Tom Brady in a minute. The signing of Saquon Barkley, obviously, over the course of the season, was incredibly important. And to your point earlier on, the fact that he was there meant that Spagnuolo had to do something and fixate on that, and he wasn't beaten by him. But they know exactly what they're doing. They have a dual threat quarterback who then, when the blitz comes, can run straight up the gut, and you're like, oh, that's not going to work. So there's just a wisdom behind the building of the team, a bit of fortune and a bit of risk in some of the draft picks that have, you know, the character issues. It turns out the Eagles had a culture that was able to deal with whatever it was. And so you got to give credit to everybody involved here, Mick.
I think you're right. Like, we've been talking about Barkley all season as like the kind of signing that changes how we even look at the position in the NFL. Like, that's how good a signing it is. I think it's going to completely change the market going forward, because there's been a few others as well to back it up. So that's not just a one-off. Like, Josh Jacobs was a really good signing for the Packers and so on. But and obviously Derrick Henry at the Ravens. But like, Barkley has been this outstanding talent since he was drafted. He's had some injury issues, of course, but he was also on, like, probably, if not the worst run team in the NFL, then the top five worst run team. And there was a lot of issues there. He never had any quarterback help. They were banking on Daniel Jones. They were paying Daniel Jones after they had the chance to get out in it, and so on. So his career was just wasting away. But people, because of that, weren't watching much of the Giants. They weren't seeing him in good positions, and they forgot how good he was. And they also did not trust that running backs, once they had a certain amount of snaps under the belt, once they hit 27 as he was then, 28 as he turned, was it last night, this week? So like very, very, like, Like, yeah. And you just don't trust that that's a viable thing anymore. But there's no real reason to think it. He's an incredible athlete. He's a great worker. He's a great professional. And he's also just like uber, uber talented. So picking him up, lots of teams could have done it. Lots of teams could have done it. Like the Giants, for all their crying about it and all the, you know, they're, oh, we don't want to lose this guy. They were in the market. They were ready to get rid of him. They got him for peanuts. And he won them the Super Bowl. You know, he might not have won them the Super Bowl last night, but they were there because of the performance of Barkley. So it's a massive pickup for running backs. But it is, as you mentioned, Jer, it's only an illustration of how they've put the entire team together. Like it's phenomenal work. Like, you know, this was a team that 2 years ago got there and were exciting, but I don't know if we knew they had a level to go. You know, and the way they've drafted and the way they've obviously used free agency and trading and everything like that has just been phenomenal. You know, picking up a guy that nobody ever heard of in Zach Bond, picking up a guy that people weren't willing to pay the money for or take the risk on in Saquon Barkley, and picking, like, Jalen Carter fell far too far down the draft because of, was it a character issue? There was a car crash involved. I'm not exactly even sure what happened, but they were the ones who went from, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, some of us would say he didn't fall far enough considering what happened there, but let's leave that.
Okay, I genuinely don't really know. Yeah.
You're better off. But the overall point is really critical there, and it's very important. And so you mentioned Saquon, and like we go back to Saquon, if you have that phone call that's caught on video, like I don't know why the Giants did this to themselves, where the GM is talking to Saquon and saying, oh, you know, you can go out there and see what you can get and then come back to us, and Saquon's kind of like looking at him, are you for real? This is the kind of respect I'm getting. And we talked about that previously, but like, if you look at that Eagles roster, it's repeatedly taking advantage of poorly run teams. So you've got Mekhi Becton starting at guard for the Eagles last night. Now, he was injured early in the game but came back in. He's a former high draft pick left tackle for the New York Jets who didn't work out. The Jets got rid of him, obviously. He had injuries while he was in New York. But the Eagles picked him up on a cheap deal and were like, hey, they were using you wrong. We're going to plug you into this other position. And now you're going to be a star. And you're one of our most important pieces on offense. Well, not most important, but you're a hugely important piece on offense. And then you go to AJ Brown in Tennessee. The Tennessee Titans are like, we're not going to pay you. We don't want to give you that much money. The Philadelphia Eagles are like, yeah, have you guys watched this guy play for you? We're going to pay him because he's incredibly good. So they bring him over and put him next to Devonta Smith. Another move that wasn't necessarily expected, similar to Saquon, because you already had Devonta Smith there. You don't necessarily think you need to add another superstar wide receiver, but having two of them means you can have a quarterback who doesn't need to be Patrick Mahomes level every single week to win games. Then you go to Darius Slay. Darius Slay, a cornerback, came in because Matt Patricia wanted him to play a certain way. He didn't want to play that way. So they were like, okay, Darius Slay, an all-pro level talent, pro bowler over and over again, proven player in this level, in this prime. He's going for cheap because Matt Patricia doesn't get along with him. Okay, let's pick him up and we'll put him in there. That puts you in a position now where you've got three key pieces, three of your star players, without investing a whole lot. You've got guys you can build around. So when you're drafting the likes of Cooper DeJean in the second or third round, or when you're in the first round and you just want to spend repeatedly on offensive linemen or defensive linemen, you can keep doing that because you've already got your proven pillars that you're building around. Whereas other teams like the Carolina Panthers or the Cleveland Browns or whoever else, they're going into the offseason right now and going into the draft. Actually, the Titans are probably the best example, where they're like, oh, we desperately need star players to build around. We've traded some away in the past because we wanted young guys and new draft picks or guys we got along better with. Whereas the Eagles never had that pressure. They were always like, all right, we've got our pillars. What deals can we take advantage of? What guys can we pick up here that make the most sense? And now Howie Roseman will go into the season and do exactly the same thing. Josh Sweat will leave. They'll find someone else at a cheaper, more valuable rate for their team. Meanwhile, someone in free agency is going to pay Josh Sweat a huge amount of money, and maybe he'll live up to what he did this year. But there's always that question mark there. So the Eagles are always in a very comfortable position because of how well they're run. And even when they're not winning Super Bowls, even if they had lost last night, you'd still be able to say the same thing. We'd just be talking about the Chiefs because the Chiefs happened to win.
Yeah, also not paying players, you say Sweat. They didn't pay Javon Hargreave. He's been a complete disaster for the 49ers, who are, you know, 2 years into an $80 million contract. That's just the wisdom of a team who knows what they're doing. And look, obviously it worked out for them, and to the victors, the spoils, as Bobby Bacala would say. Mick.
Yeah.
What was Tom Brady like?
I don't know. I'm not as bothered about, like, I don't think he's as bad as some people have made out. I certainly don't think he's, like, exceptionally good. I kind of forget he's Tom Brady usually when I'm watching the game. You know, it's like, whatever. I wish he didn't call Mahomes Patrick all the time. I suppose that kind of annoyed me. I would like him almost to speak with less of a smile on his face. I feel like he's got the toothy smile plastered on his face. The camera's not on you. You know, just calm down a little bit. I'd like him to be a bit more serious. As a player, he was like one of the most serious people in the world. Like, he was an angry quarterback, you know, and especially off the field when something went wrong. And I'd like him to bring a bit of that into his commentary. I feel like his analysis is pretty good. I feel like he calls it okay. I think we overanalyze it a little bit. I think anybody who's doing that job for the first time ever, and we're all listening into it for the first season ever, probably isn't that good, would be my guess. I don't know what you
mean. It was a busy weekend for him. Like, he had to commentate in the game, and then he ended racism with Snoop Dogg. Like, so, like, the whole thing was just like a lot of suckle riding on Tom Brady. I'm guessing neither of you have seen that advert. Anyway, there's an advert that went out over the Super Bowl of Snoop and Tom Brady shouting at each other about why they shouldn't hate each other based on who they are, and it's the most weird, cringe thing you'll ever come across. But no, look, commentators tend to become white noise for me after the first while of them doing it. I tend to agree with Mick. I think he's fine. He's like, Greg Olsen came out a few weeks back and he's very unhappy that he's not getting to do the big games, and he's now openly saying it. So basically he's like, Fox, you guys, I'm going to stay with you while I have to. CBS, come and get me, or NBC, come and get me. He's a far better commentator, but realistically, Greg Olsen was an all-pro tight end once or twice maybe, but not a significant name or a significant face in NFL circles. So he's going to have to earn his spot somewhere else. You can't really fault what they're doing. You can't really fault Brady for his first season. I think I came in the first couple of weeks, I was like, he was awful, and he was awful. But since then, he's become acceptable. And if he stays at this level, he'll be there forever if he wants to be. He won't be John Madden. He won't even be John Gruden. So he'll still be decent. He'll be effective. He won't be in a Super Bowl again for, what, 3 more years, 4 more years? So he's got plenty of time to practice up and get back to a better level for the biggest game in the world.
Travis Kelce done?
I mean, he is done. Whether he leaves or not, I don't know.
I think he'll play another year. I think the pain of leaving without winning the three in a row, I think he would have. I don't know. Maybe I'm saying that wrong. Maybe I think if they had won, I think he was gone. I think that was a good night. But now I think it's less certain.
I think he does
look like there's nothing left there, because all season we're like, oh, it's only the regular season. Kelce, they're walking him, they're keeping him for the playoffs, as they had for the previous couple of years. But there was nothing there in the playoffs this year.
The other question is, how cutthroat is Andy Reid?
Yeah,
because are you sure Andy Reid won't come? You might not be done, but we're done with you.
He's 35. He'll be 36 next October.
Yeah, but where does that, like, the conversation, like, where do the Chiefs go from here in general? You know, like, they've a young receiving core that might turn into something that might not. But if Patrick Mahomes isn't getting any running help or any protection, and, you know, it's easy to go and say we need to get a left tackle and not a left guard there. But they tried that last year, didn't work out. They're going to be picking number 31 in the draft. You know, everyone needs a left tackle. Like, you know, or maybe 10, 15 teams do. It's easier said than done. And they probably need a lot more than just a left tackle on that line as well. You know, there's a lot of rebuilding to do there. You look at the other side of the ball, good year, absolutely blitzed in the Super Bowl. And, you know, Chris Jones is going to be another year older. What else is there? So some good players on the defense, and they're not going to fall apart, and they're going to have Patrick Mahomes, so they're going to be in the playoffs every year. But have we seen the end of the Chiefs the way we know it, the way we are going into a game saying,
yeah,
the Eagles have all the better players, but I still think the Chiefs are going to win? That might be over now.
I think it is. And I think when a beatdown like this happens so spectacularly and so publicly, and everybody realizes, actually, hang on a second, there's just a stripping away of an aura. And that's natural. When a beatdown like that was, if they'd got it back and there'd been a bit of Chiefsy something about them in the second half, you'd be like, oh, they're still there. They're very close. But, like, that was a... They took their manhood.
The problem for the Chiefs, and for Kelce in particular here, is so they have $11 million in cap space entering next season, which is fine. You can retain everything you've got. You can make one signing maybe in free agency. But you're not going to get better with that, especially when you have a 31st over or 31st pick in the first round, and then so on and ensuing in draft picks. I would imagine Mahomes will redo his contract a little bit to free stuff up. But here's the problem for Kelce, and maybe potentially a problem for Joe Thuney. The only way they can really make significant money is by cutting Kelce and Thuney. If you cut the two of them, you'll get $34 million in cap space back. That moves you into a different stratosphere of, oh, we can compete for some big-name free agents. We can compete for people who, it wouldn't be Josh Sweat, but it might be T. Higgins. It'll be someone like that, someone who's younger, in their prime, and who can offer a little bit more. Realistically, they need Rashee Rice to come back. They need him to get healthy and also stay out of trouble, which is that question mark that needs to be answered going forward, because he's probably still going to be suspended for a bit next year. They're not in a great place, if we're being honest. Like, they need offensive line help. They need wide receiver help. They need tight end help. Defensively, they're pretty solid.
And running back,
I think they'll get away at running backs if they improve that offensive line a little bit. But overall, they need pretty much everything.
A running back heavy draft, I'm told. So we shall see. Is there anything else in the Jalen Hurts being the dual threat quarterback? And actually, that's why everybody really wants one, that the stereotypical drop back passers still really good if you get the absolute elite. But if you're in the middle tier, so Brock Purdy's got to get 50 to 55 million. And look at that going, I'm not sure about that. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Hey, you've seen Brock Purdy run. He can move a little bit. He's not. You see him running around there and throwing the ball all over the place. I wouldn't worry about him. It's more the proper statues in the league who are losing out. The Jared Goffs of the league who can't do anything at all. No, but it's further proof. Oh, you mentioned Kirk Cousins, by the way. The curse has been broken. A team that lost to Kirk Cousins has finally won the Super Bowl. It's the first time it's ever happened. Anyway, he's been in the league for 18 years or whatever it is. But I think Hurts, like, I think this is kind of a thing we've all come to accept at this stage. You have to have an athlete at quarterback. But, like, Mahomes even looked a little bit slow last night, I felt like, when he was running around getting chased by the pressure. Maybe it's a long season of being hit. Maybe it's him getting to a different stage of his career. I don't know. Like, there has been discussions in the past about him and how he needs to keep himself in better shape and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe that would be an overreaction thing, but I do feel like he'll probably come back next year in a little bit better shape just to be able to evade sacks a little bit more. Hurts as a whole, yeah, when he runs, when he's fully healthy, like he's as good as anyone in terms of running over people and stuff like that. He's built like a running back, so the Eagles will be delighted to keep running the offense with air. And at 26, he can do this for 3 or 4 more years at least.
I don't know, Cian. Once you get a dad bod, very difficult to shake it. On that note, the season's in the books. Any other observations or anything else you want to talk about? Any of the coaching or the free agency nonsense? That we're a month away from free agency. Maybe we'll do an emergency free agency one when whoever. What's the biggest free agent or trade shock that would actually go, yeah, we need to talk about this?
Well, Myles Garrett is going to be the thing that shakes up the lead. Demanded a trade off the Browns. Browns are holding strong. Apparently, there's been like double-digit teams in from in inquiring. So where he ends up is going to be a game changer. You know, if he goes to a team building, perhaps with the fourth pick in the draft and a new quarterback, and you know, like.
Or the Eagles.
As an example.
Well, I
just
want to win, one
Mick.
Team
That's why
there.
he wants to win.
Yeah, fair point.
There's one team out there who has a proven quarterback, potential Hall of Fame quarterback, who's on the trade block. So maybe they can stop him from Myles Garrett. Aaron Rodgers turned up to the Jets last month, apparently, and was like, right, let's have this meeting where I can tell you what we're going to do next year. And the Jets went, you'll be somewhere else next year. You're not coming back here. So Aaron Rodgers is officially on the market and looking for a new home. And my problem is, who's going to take that risk? Because he's not going to be a backup anywhere. He's proven over and over again, like, he'll disrupt. Imagine the stuff he'd do to undermine a starter if he was your backup. The Cleveland Browns are probably the franchise who will do it, and they've already got Deshaun Watson there. So I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff to figure out. The only other thing I really want to try to figure out and understand is the same 50 people who vote for the All-Pros that vote for the MVP, okay? Lamar Jackson was the All-Pro quarterback by a distance. Josh Allen won MVP. Someone explain that to me. I don't understand.
Is there an explanation? Do you know what the answer is?
The 50 thing is gone, though. I think there's hundreds of votes now. It changed like 2 years ago for MVP.
So either way, it's the same people. You're
50.
Like,
yeah.
That guy's the best player in football, but you're getting the award for MVP. No, I don't know. I don't explain that. This is the America.
It
was either or, though, wasn't it? Like, yeah.
They were pretty close. All right.
One more thing, though, but Jer, before we go, we should mention that not the next time the pod is coming to you, but like when we're live from Crow Park next year.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned that at all. Like, I know we've talked about it on loads of other platforms, but on this particular podcast, the last of the year, last of the season anyway, we have touchdown for NFL in Ireland.
So as it stands, we still don't know. The fixtures haven't been announced. There was some suggestion that could be the Dolphins or the Bills, which would be amazing. Right,
I've heard. Yeah, well, I'm saying I've heard. Yeah, I've heard. I'm saying not from like behind the scenes or anything like that, but I've heard from people who are generally know these things, but generally have some bit of intelligence with the NFL that the Bills are the most likely, and I don't know why that is. Like, does Buffalo have a lot of Irish people there?
No,
that tends to be the way they make these decisions.
It's the power of the team to say no. So the Packers apparently said no. And that's why.
Oh, okay.
That's why they were the long favourites. And they're no. Or maybe
that would have been great.
Maybe they're keeping them for one of the other foreign games. So the list of teams who can be is obviously you have to be on the schedule for the Steelers. It's not going to be any of their divisional rivals. So then again, you know, quickly, and then it can't be a team who's already away somewhere else, or I think you can say no to going away 2 years in a row. So there's a very, very limited number of teams, and certainly the Bills is one of those that has been circulated. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Like late September, early October, we're thinking
September,
as well, are we?
Last weekend of September, yeah.
Wow.
I think the important thing to understand as well is like the college football has come here and taken Dublin over, of course. The NFL like is a different level. Like there's billions and billions here. Like I think there'll be so much more organized stuff, so much more watch parties and events going on around it. So I can't wait for it. It's going to be phenomenal.
All right. Happy Super Bowl, everybody. Well done. We'll see you next season.
NFL on off the ball.
Steelers with the touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
Off the ball.